Woke up this morning, the house was cold. Checked the furnace, she wasn't burning. Went out and hopped in my old Ford. Hit the engine, but she ain't turning. Giving each other some hard lessons lately. We ain't learning. Same sad story, that's a fact. One step up and two steps back.
Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, depending upon where in the world you are and what time of the day you're listening to this post-Wolves Talking the Blues. Matches are coming thick and fast at the moment, but not a huge amount for Evertonians to be either pleased with or indeed at this moment in time to look forward to, I think. George and Andy, how are you both?
Better than Everton.
Okay, that's... That leaves an enormous canvas to be filled, George.
Yeah. He's not wrong.
I don't think there'll be any shortage of gobbing off here. Go on.
Should we deal with the positives before we get into the negatives?
Yeah, that's been too long, Andy. Nice goal. Well done, mate.
I was going to say, for me, there were two, maybe three positives last night. The obvious one being... Harrison Armstrong,
yeah,
who I was very, very impressed with last night.
How old is that boy?
17, 18.
Wow.
And he played like a seasoned pro. He put himself about, he got forward, he moved the ball quick, he tackled. He's got good vision. He's got good feet. I like the use of the outside of his boot for crossing, even though the rest of the team didn't seem to have a clue to do it. Surely they're aware of that from the short time they've had practicing. But anyway, his performance was the brightest light on the night for me. I thought Timur Abunim, until he picked up his booking, had a good game.
Yep, I agree with that.
You know, he put himself about, and now I'm beginning to run short of positives after those two. Pickford's save. You know, he kept his concentration all night, that which was good to see, to make that save at the end, which we. But other than that, there were very, very few. But I can't think of many other positives. Jimmy Garner had a reasonable game. McNeil, apart from the two crosses for the goal and the header that Keane hit the post with, a non-entity. Grealish is beginning to frustrate the hell out of me. We'll talk about him more as we get deeper into the podcast, but that literally was about it. Other than that, just about everything else was pretty abject. And I'm fed up for saying that.
Let's start with the Grealish, Andy. Sorry, yeah. George, I'll ask you your opinions in a few minutes. I'm interested in why, in particular, Grealish is frustrating you.
Because he's, if you like, he's our star player. Probably the most gifted technically. Biggest reputation, blah, 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 and he is peripheral in games. He doesn't impose himself on games. I don't think he's a leader on the pitch. And for someone of his capabilities, and money shouldn't come into it, but his price tag in terms of either a salary or a potential transfer fee, he doesn't justify it. He doesn't fill it for me. I'm sorry, he's peripheral. he's playing, he's either playing or is being played far too wide, in my opinion. He should be 10 yards further in, not hugging the touchline, because he's not a winger.
Where he's played his whole career, Andy. And
he's played wide, but not right on the touchline. And he's spending so much time wider than I would expect him to be played, given his skills and his ability to hold the ball. To me, he should be playing much narrower. And the other thing that frustrates me is he slows the game down, and we need to be playing quicker. And far too often, when he gets the ball, the game slows down, because he'll jog, and then he'll jink backwards and forwards and try and beat his man. And all right, he wins a lot of free kicks, but we can get onto that nonsense as well later. But to me, I don't. He just frustrates me, because you know when he first came, and he had that fine. You know, he had a decent start with Everton, and he's playing regular football, which he wasn't getting at the other end of the East Lancs. And everybody thought, if he carries on like this, he's got a good chance of making the World Cup squad. Not that making England's World Cup squad is very high on my agenda. It's not. I've always put club football ahead of country football. But that surely was his aim, was to force Thomas Tuchel into a situation where he had to consider him for the England squad to go to the World Cup. The only way Jack Grealish is going to the World Cup at the moment is as a spectator. He's not doing enough in our games to justify Thomas Tuchel saying, yeah, okay, we'll bring you back into the national team fold. And I just think that's an enormous waste, and it's a frustration. For me, it is. If it's not frustrating for Jack Grealish, it damn well should be. Because there's no way in the memory of man is he boarding the plane to the States in the summer, except as a fan or maybe a pundit on TV.
He certainly knows how to talk, Andy.
Well, yeah, and there's another thing. You've just tripped the rant trap, haven't you?
It was a cue for a song, Andy. Yes, certainly.
Yeah. How dumb are footballers? Just how dumb can footballers be? Name the two who picked up red cards last night. What on earth was Michael Keane doing, pulling the hair of the Wolves forward and then claiming he didn't, and then having his manager back him up saying it wasn't deliberate? If it wasn't deliberate, what the hell was he doing it for? And then Grealish, you know, rightly or wrongly, you know, he thinks he's been fouled more times than free kicks have been given. He's probably right in that respect. But once you've been booked for complaining, you don't go and compound it by then trying to take the piss out of the referee by clapping him when he gives you a free kick. As soon as that happened, I thought to myself, he's getting another yellow and he's gone. And lo and behold, that happened. So just how dumb can these footballers be? And then how dumb can your manager be to back it up? I'm sorry, but those incidents and Moyes' reaction was unbelievable for me. Unbelievable.
Sorry, just to get this right. Do you think Keane's sending off was justified?
As I said in the text message during the game, in the way that the rules are interpreted these days, yes. Was it a sending off offence in any other sphere of life? Was it heck? And Moyes made the only decent point to my mind that Moyes made, from what our kid told me and then what I read on the Everton website later, was, you know, if players are going to get sent off for that, then what about all the pushing and shoving and grabbing and holding that goes on in the penalty area? Nobody's got an argument with that. The amount of grabbing and holding and pushing and shoving that goes on in the penalty area at every corner and every free kick, and with increasing regularity, every long throw-in, is bizarre. But until referees, until officials really clamp down on it, you know, it's going to continue. But the blatant pull of a player's hair, I just, it was an inane thing to do. And you just knew the way the rules are these days and the way they're interpreted, and with so many cameras around the pitch and VAR in operation, it was nailed on to be a red card. Absolutely nailed on. There was no way in the memory of man that was not going to be a red card offence.
What you know, was your view of it,
Moyes
Paul?
Said, hang on, Moyes said it wasn't violent. No, it wasn't violent. But what on earth did he do it for? What was he hoping to gain by pulling the guy's hair? If he wanted to impede him, pull his bloody shirt. He'd have got a yellow for that.
What was your view of it, Paul?
Well, I think my main concern is the inconsistency and the application of the rules. You can't just punish a player and punish a team in isolation like that, and then ignore everything else that goes on around the pitch throughout the rest of the game. He was a totally inexperienced referee.
Just let me jump in, Paul. I'm not exonerating the referee here, by the way.
No. Okay.
Right, carry on. Good. Sorry.
He missed it, and he was advised by VAR that it constituted reckless or dangerous play, and that you should go and have a look at it. You couldn't stand up in any court in any country and claim the actions of pulling somebody's hair as against pulling somebody's shirt or anything of that nature in a game where, you know, there is always contact and there is always players grabbing each other, constitutes a danger to the player that was who was impeded. Was it a foul? Absolutely, it was a foul. Was it worthy of a yellow card? Possibly, but not 100%. But not in any sense was it worthy of a red card. And any referee worth his salt would have looked at it and said, I hear what you say to the VAR people. You've recommended that I go and look at it because I clearly missed it because it was on the blind side of where I was standing. But in my opinion, it doesn't merit a red card for violent or dangerous play because it wasn't. And I think Moyes was absolutely correct to say that. And, you know, when the Premier League managers get together and when they get together with the refereeing bodies, they've got to talk about situations like this, because you either have complete consistency and every grab of somebody constitutes dangerous or violent play, or it doesn't. And then you have to think about, well, what is another penalty or another application of another rule in order to cut this out? It's just so inconsistent, and it is destroying. We've talked about this. George, you in particular, have talked about this on many, many occasions. We're going to talk about it in another context a bit later. Mm-hmm. It is destroying the product that's on the pitch, both as a visual spectacle, but also in terms of competitive integrity. Referees and VAR are having too significant a role in the outcomes of games, and that significant role is then compounded by the inconsistencies. And from my perspective, it wouldn't have mattered whether it was Everton or anybody else. It is destroying the game.
Fair play.
Everybody, whether they go to the game, whether they watch on television, in one form or another, are paying for a premium product where, albeit it's the Premier League's claim, we're supposed to have the best league in the world. I think we've got the most watchable league in the world, notwithstanding, you know, some of the games aren't always great. certainly the most watched league in the world. We attract most of the world's best players, certainly the world's most expensive players. For the most part, most teams now play in brand new stadiums where there's been lots of money invested in the infrastructure, lots of money invested in players, players' wages, managers, coaches, medical people, etc., etc., etc. And we're allowing what should be a premium product to be totally destroyed in several aspects. But refereeing is one where it should be very, very easy to control, particularly in a situation where you've now got multiple cameras watching the game to assist the referee in making the right decision. Not to override the referee, not to demean the referee, not to reduce his effectiveness on the pitch, to assist the referee in the correct administration of the rules of the game. And that is not happening, and it certainly didn't happen last night.
I would agree with 90% of that. Certainly the inconsistencies, there wouldn't be a football fan in the world who wouldn't agree with that, who watches the Premier League or any other league that has now got three control freaks or four control freaks with toys, where it used to just have a referee. And we all remember the days when you thought that bloke just wants us to lose. Well, those days are gone. It's now But you're right about all that. I think you're wrong about the penalty. And I think what's highlighted by that incident last night was that they've drawn a line, and they may or may not be right, but you're absolutely right to say it's not a consistent line. But they've drawn the line between pulling his shirt as he jumped up with him. No, you're not going to get this header, I'm getting it, and pulling his hair. I think those two things are different. And like Andy, I wasn't in the, as soon as I saw the close up of it and saw what he'd done, I knew that was a red. Whether it should have been or not is not really the, it, well, it is the point of a discussion. But what they've done is gone, you can't pull, you could pull, they've obviously saying, because you're right, we've banged on about it for ages, you can pull the shirt, you can tug at this, but you can't actually manhandle, people's hair. I mean, it is a different thing. If you were playing in a game and somebody pulled your hair, you'd go, "What the fuck is this?" It's so I thought Keane was wrong. I thought the justification of him was bullshit, frankly. And Tarko was really interesting because he said something which, is part of what you were saying, Paul. That was that guy's second game. And he didn't know Michael Keane. He'd never reffed him before. Everybody knows Keane's not a cheat, not a fouler, not a nicest bloke in the world. All that waffle went on, which is fine for the captain of a team to defend his player like that. But actually, it's got nothing to do with what he did. We have. I recognised the moment as he did it. It's a split second thing, and he just goes, "I'll have that bit," and I'm quite certain now looking at it and not protesting his innocence. He did do it. He shouldn't have done it. And he got the ultimate punishment. Whether that ultimate punishment leads to a much more rigid discussion about what the F VAR is doing and is for, they had every right to say to the ref, "There's something you couldn't have seen. Go and have a look at it." But from what we all understand, is that when the referee went to look at it in his ear hole, we believe, because we don't know, because we're not party to it, because we're not grown up enough or something, they're going, "It's a pen, mate. It's a red." Now, they may not have done that. I don't know. I don't know whether anybody knows. But you're right to say the inconsistencies are maddening. But Moyes' rant about we should all grow our hair long and we should all get our hair cut is fatuous, frankly. I found that
I
slightly.
don't. I agree with that last point. I don't think Moyes covered himself in a great deal of glory, and I think he lost the plot at the end, and he
More things,
didn't
Paul.
speak as coherently as you might have expected somebody with his experience to do.
Can
But
I just finish what I wanted to say? Because it does include that. He was eye-poppingly angry. And I thought to myself, yeah, you're angry with yourself because you got outthought here because you've taken Norway off the ball. They changed the formation at half time. And the most interesting thing Tarko said, which was fascinating to me, he said, it took us too long to work out what they'd done and adjust. That's not necessarily the centre-half's job in the middle of a game of football. And I think Moyes missed it. He was outthought by Edwards and certainly outplayed all the way through the second half. And then he gets an excuse to get angry, and he got angry. And my feeling about that, when I saw how angry he was, and, you know, we all know the man quite well by now, he was popping mad, was I wished he'd saved that anger for earlier and game management and not rant about something. That's the end of my rant. Thank you.
I want to bring up another inconsistency then with the way Moisey got booked last night, and you would imagine when you watched it live as we did, you imagine he's been booked there for effing and blinding for abuse of the official, and it turned out he got the yellow card for leaving his technical area.
Well, I think by that time, that young lad had begun to lose it. When you said, I'm not exonerating the rest, surely that's what you were thinking of, wasn't it?
Well, I mean, no, I wasn't. No. My non-exoneration of the referee was just that, because he missed. He didn't punish with a yellow card the foul on Armstrong in the first half that could have been a leg breaker. He missed that, and because it's nowhere near the penalty area, VAR can't intervene. Hello, could have been injured. VAR.
Excuse me, VAR can intervene.
I thought VAR couldn't intervene.
No, well, did, Andy. The team was nowhere near the penalty area
Right. So why didn't VAR? Well, all right then. So the question has to be: why didn't VAR intervene with the foul on Armstrong that could potentially been a leg breaker?
That is my point. VAR is only used for, and I'm quoting directly from the Premier League website,
right,
clear and obvious errors or serious missed incidents in four match-changing situations: goals, penalty decisions, direct red card incidents, and mistaken identity.
What they thought, Keane.
They thought the Keane was a direct red card incident because it constituted violent play.
You're right.
And yet, forgive me for not knowing who the player was, the tackle was just ignored. Mm. Because in the eyes of the VAR people, it didn't constitute a serious missed incident. Hello?
No. It's mind-boggling the
people who run the game, the Premier League, and this has got nothing to do with the new regulator, because the new regulator's got nothing to do with anything that goes on the pitch. They've got to address this, because it doesn't happen in other games. You take rugby union as an example, which is a much more physical sport. And one would assume tempers get riled much more readily, or would get riled much more readily in rugby union than they do in football, because there's much more contact involved. But it doesn't happen, and it doesn't happen often in rugby union, because the administrators say, these are the rules, these are the penalties if you break the rules, and they're going to be applied in every single case, and almost without exception, that is the case. And everybody knows that's the case. Everybody knows that the authority that the referee has. Everybody treats the referee with respect. Yes, sir. No, sir. Three bags full, sir. Which perhaps is a bit excessive in these days, but nevertheless, that's what they do. And it works.
What Grealish did with the referee.
Well, yeah. But this is the point. The point is that not just Everton players, but players generally, with all of the shoving, pushing, digging at elbows, leading with an elbow in aerial combat, pushing the surrounding the goalkeeper for corners, etc., 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 is all a result of It's like school children. When you remember when we were at school and we used to get a teacher in for the day because our real teacher was off sick. And because you knew that they had no authority, everybody like took the piss out of the teacher for the whole day. Well, they certainly did in my time. I'm pretty sure it was the case in yours. Because this is not stamped down and because it's not done in a consistent manner, all of these irregularities that occur in the game will continue to occur because on a cost-benefit type analysis, the chances of you actually being penalized for doing these things are pretty minimal because you're not often pulled up for this type of stuff, but the benefits of doing it are very, very obvious. And last night, you can argue, and you know, I wouldn't argue quite so strongly that Keane should have been able to get away with what he did. What I'm saying is that because so much else happens on the pitch, and not just in one game, but in every single game, that the application of the rules, such as they are, in an isolated incident like that is destroying the game. You either have complete and absolute adherence to the rules, or you have no rules at all, you know, from a physical contact point of view. That's my view of it.
No, Paul, I don't disagree. My annoyance was with Keno for doing it in the first place, and then it being compounded by Grealish,
But he
you
did
know,
it. He,
applauding the referee.
he, well, let's get
No,
on to Grealish
everyone.
in a second. Keane did it because he knows that 39 times out of 40 or 49 times out of 50, he's never going to get pulled up for it. You didn't see the Wolves players complaining about it. The guy who had his hair pulled just carried on with
Well,
the game.
no, yeah, because well, he did have a bit of a
Well,
whinge,
he
but
didn't
all the
because.
rest of the players were blindsided because it was blindside. But you know, that's the doing something blindside and getting away with it 49 times out of 50. It is to me, it's no art. You know, in this day and age, you know, in with so many cameras and so many angles, you net you, the, you There's no way you're going to get away with it 50 times out of 50.
I
There's
think
no
you also
way.
have to factor into that, Andy, the ego of the people in the VAR van.
Well, yeah.
Well, don't tell me they're not imposing on the game. They are.
No, I'm not. I wasn't going to suggest 1 minute. They're not imposing on the game. They clearly are imposing on the game, and in just about every game as well.
It's important to them. This is what sell, you know, this, you know, you, well, it's another question about. You know, I suppose to who that was good entertainment last night.
To whom?
Two red cards, loads of bookings, two good goals, load of controversy, load of argy-bargy. Isn't this what makes up great football entertainment?
Not to me, it doesn't.
No, not to
I think
me either.
the Newcastle Leeds game was a far more entertaining game.
I'm sure, but you know.
No, I get your point because controversy obviously sells.
Yes, but
But what we're doing is by allowing these controversial situations to arise, be it Everton or anybody else, in my opinion, we are destroying the game.
well, the bit I'm most in agreement with you on is be consistent. Because Andy's right, the throw in free kick corner all in wrestling is crazy. Absolutely crazy, and everybody's pulling everybody. All the small players on the pitch are not watching the ball, they're watching the bloke they have to block off. Blocking off's allowed, is it? And pulling the shirt is allowed, and wrestling him to the floor. And I didn't use my actual fingers, but I did throw him down. It's you're spoiling the game, is right. There can't be anybody who thinks all that's marvellous. Can't be.
So where's the leadership?
There is no
From
leadership. Where's the
who?
person that stands up and says, look, we're
You do.
responsible for this product. We're the people who run the Premier League are custodians of the highest level of professional football in England. Where is the leadership that says we're getting this wrong? And there will come a point where people will say, you know what? There are better things to do with my money. There's better things to do with my time because I can go and watch something that has some integrity and some consistency as against I never know what I'm going to see from one week to the next. And in two identical situations, I don't know what the decision is going to be.
Paul, you've just mentioned the leadership of the Premier League. Who is that?
Well,
And does hang on, Paul, let him answer that.
Well, do they have the right to independently, now that VAR is everywhere, all through the Europa setup and through FIFA, through the world game, you know, the next World Cup will be all run on VAR. I don't know whether AFCON is as well. Do they have the right, sorry, Andy, but do they have the right to go, right, we're going to sort out VAR in the Premier League?
Yeah,
Independent.
each of the competitions have slightly different uses of VAR because
All right.
it's done at competition level.
Right,
So
but my point is,
the Premier League
go on.
can determine and have determined exactly how VAR is used in Premier League games.
Right, so who is this Premier League that's determined how VAR will be interpreted in the UK? Who
Well,
is it?
it would be the
Is it an
Premier League.
individual? Is it three or four individuals? Or is it one member from each club?
It would be the Premier League Board of Directors, and just Googling who they are. Obviously, Richard Masters is one.
We all know he's a tosser. Argument on that.
We were too disgusted, Andy, with your lack.
Oh, sorry.
Go on, Paul. What? Keep going with the answer.
Well, I haven't found it yet, so.
Please. Rest in peace, Terry Yorris. Dirty bastard. He was a hard one.
Yeah.
Now, here we go.
Can you imagine if VAR had been in operation when Leeds were at there? Dear me.
Well, that's interesting, Andy, while Paul shuffled through his papers, that Martin Chivers said in the, and well, obviously he didn't say it because he's dead.
The late Martin Chivers, he's passed away as well.
That's what I was saying, yeah, that in
Oh,
his
sorry.
own book, he was saying, in my day, tackles from behind were absolutely everything you expected, that the pitches were covered in mud and rutted,
Yeah.
and the ball was twice the weight. And he said,
Yeah.
They are running on the top of the pitch, and you know I'm not certainly not calling for any of that back again, but it was interesting that he made a point of going, I mean, you know we when you look back at one of those old games on Thingy Bob, and they put the ball in the quadrant and all those things, you say, oh, the good old days, and then you watch Norman Hunter clear somebody out, you go, oh no, it wasn't. And you have to remember, I don't care about him anymore, certainly not him. But the reason for all this, the surrounding the goalie at corners and free kicks, started with Jack Charlton and Don Revie, who were anti-football. For all that they could play gloriously, that team, they were the nastiest, most negative bunch of blank blanks I've ever seen. What's the answer, Paul?
Okay, so the board comprises of a chair, three independent non-executive directors, and the chief executive. The chair is Alison Britton, who is a very successful businesswoman, run some very large businesses, obviously never played professional football, but has a wide experience both in the commercial sector and also in the financial services sector. So
what's the connection to football?
What it says here is, as a football fan, Alison is passionate about the long-term success of the game and the positive impact it can have on people's lives, their communities, and society as a whole.
Right. Okay.
So
what's
also
your that?
she's a trustee of the what used to be the Prince's Trust. So She's probably a very nice person. I don't know her, but she probably is. Mai Fifield, independent non-executive director, and I'm just reading off here. She led Sky's bidding process for three Premier League cycles. So she comes from a broadcast background. So pretty much understand why she's there, because she's obviously got a lot of experience about media and selling media rights around the world. It's what's made the Premier League a success. Dharmesh Mistry, another non-executive, experienced technology venture capitalist, entrepreneur, and non-executive director. Worked at Procter and Gamble, Boston Consulting Group. So he's obviously, an intelligent guy. Again, no experience of playing football. He's the Premier League's representative on the board of the FA. And then we've got Matthew Ryder, KC. So he's a barrister who's an independent non-executive director. And then we've got Richard Masters, chief executive and director of the Premier League. So they're the people who run the Premier League and make policy decisions. They obviously have to refer, as in any business, the directors have to refer back to the shareholders and get shareholder approval for what they do. But generally, the executives are there to run the business and to make decisions on behalf of the shareholders week in, week out. And as we
And
know,
the shareholders are the 20 clubs each season in the Premier League.
and the Football Association has one share as well.
Right.
But as we
So,
know, to make a rule change in the Premier League, it requires 16 of the 20 Premier League clubs to agree to that rule change. So the introduction of VAR and all of that will have been done in consultation with the clubs and with the agreements of a majority of the clubs.
can I ask you both a question? If you, because obviously we're fans, and I was thinking, well, the fans have, but I don't believe anybody listens to fans anymore. So it seems to me that if you're to get a rule change, and I would be crying out for one, and a pretty taxing, brutal one too. What do you think the opinions of the present 20 football clubs would be if you suggested some serious reform of VAR?
You mean what would be the thoughts of the clubs or the fans of the clubs?
No, not the fans, Andy, the
Oh,
clubs, the
not the fan,
managers,
right, the
I guess.
clubs.
Well, let's just make it easy. What happens if 20 managers go, this is bollocks? If you'd have asked David Moyes for his vote last night, you know where that vote would have gone.
Yeah.
So what do we think the other 19 managers might think all the time, rather than when they're stressed about feeling robbed?
Um,
So
that
we
that that dis that that discussion then needs to be in the close season when nobody is stressed by a decision that's just gone the other way.
maybe, yeah, good
The
point.
first thing that maybe if there's a Premier League Managers Association, maybe they should convene a meeting, probably in pretty short time after the end of the season. To say, right, fellas, we're here to discuss VAR and the way it's being interpreted. Well, maybe even start with its existence.
Well,
Do
that's
we want to
kind of
keep it, or do we want to get shut? And if we are going to keep it, what the hell can we do to influence the decision making whereby we do gain some level of consistency and we don't have situations where one guy gets sent off for pulling somebody's hair, even though he didn't rip his head off, but somebody else doesn't even get a yellow card for a tackle that was a potential leg breaker. And it doesn't necessarily have to relate purely to last night. I suspect you could go to any game in the Premier League throughout the season where there's a couple of decisions which are interpreted differently. And I would defy anyone to show me a game that was absolutely perfectly refereed and perfectly VAR'd,
That
because it ain't happening.
wasn't my point, Andy. My
Oh,
point
okay.
then, no, no, no. I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying. And what I'm saying is, what do you think, both of you, the possibilities of the 20 managers being allowed by their clubs to even have that conversation? And what do you sense is the will of the 20 managers, the other 19 as of last night?
I would think, with no evidence, I would think that probably somewhere around the order of around about 12 of the 20 clubs
Yep.
would want to see changes, because they will, and they will be the smaller clubs, the clubs that have been promoted, the clubs who struggle in the league, the clubs who don't get regular
The
European football,
non-challenger clubs.
non-challenger clubs. There'd probably be around about 12 of them would say, we think that we get the rough end of the stick here. And they can probably provide the evidence that supports that view. Therefore, we want to make changes. The clubs that believe that they, even if they don't ever say this publicly, the clubs that believe that they benefit from the system as it is are never going to allow it to happen. So
No.
you have to get to the point where 14 clubs of the 20 believe that they will be advantaged by changing the rules. Not that football will be advantaged,
Yes,
because
quite.
it doesn't operate in that way.
No,
Nobody is
quite.
taking a holistic view of the game here and saying, we've got a responsibility to the game. Everybody is saying, actually, if I'm the chief executive of Everton Football Club or another club, or if I'm the manager, my responsibility is to my employers, not to the game itself.
So whose responsibility is the game itself? Just us suckers like us who do care. I don't believe that the three of us are in any way unique. I think there's three of us for every club at, you know what I'm saying. Who does give a toss for the kind of moral centre of the game, really? Because there was something, a bit.
Well, I think
Well,
you can, before I answer
you've
that,
got. Well,
go on, Andy.
all I was going to say is we've got a situation here where there's 20 managers and 20 boards of 20 club owners, stroke boards of directors, and that executive that Paul's just outlined, which was, correct me if I'm wrong, five people in total. So five plus 20 owners, that's 25 people, 20 managers. That's 45 people, and let's just say an average of three directors per club. So that's another 60 people. So a little over 100 people are controlling the destiny of the top flight football in the UK. Whereas the fan bases vary from what, 13, 12, 13,000 at Bournemouth. To 75,000, this is match going fan bases, 12, 13,000 at Bournemouth. That heavily outnumbers the 105 or so that we've just tallied up, to 75,000 at Old Trafford every week or every other week. So,
No, they go every week, Andy. They think they're going to watch them again. Sorry, go on.
well,
I was being facetious.
you know what, you know where I'm coming at
I
here.
do, yeah.
50,000 at Bramley Moor, 60,000 at the Etihad, Anfield, 50,000 at Newcastle. Totally up. 10 games every weekend. Average gate must be circa 40,000. Even if you throw, Brentford's home gate and Bournemouth's home gate in it, let's put them two as being away games. 60,000 at Tottenham, 60,000 at Arsenal, 75,000 at Old Trafford, 60,000. You know what I'm saying? There's hundreds of thousands of people going to the game every week, and there's a huge number of them each week walking away from their grounds, aggrieved at one or more decisions. And yet the 105 people who control the game think everything's hunky dory. Talk about tail wagging the dog. It's and you know, it's unbelievable. Now, how you garner the opinions of 300,000 or 400,000 fans every weekend, I do not know. But what I do know is that the game cannot seriously continue the way it is, with idiotic decisions being made by circa 100 people. Like stupid things like, why do we have kickoffs going backwards instead of going forwards? Why is a corner kick now the ball is allowed to overhang the quadrant? What numpty decided that 3.5-inch move of a ball was, you know, critical to the future of the game of football? What idiot decided that kickoffs going backwards was a necessary move in football? What improvement did it bring to the game of football? These ludicrous decisions are being made by people with precious little feel for the game. Of those 105 people, the only ones who've got any genuine feel for the game are the managers. They're the only people who've got any genuine understanding of the game of football. Not the owners and the directors and an executive that have got no background in football, and yet they're overseeing decisions being made that change the rules. Is it any wonder that fans are becoming increasingly, well, as I see it, fans are becoming disenfranchised with the game, and you can point all you want to full houses every week. That's another piece of engineering by the Premier League as well.
Absolutely, it is, Andy. 15.4 million people was the aggregate attendance at Premier League last season. Right. But that doesn't mean that 15.4 million people went. It means that 15.4 million tickets were sold.
Tickets were sold, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just going to jump in here to say this. It's all kind of glass half empty. These are the same people who changed the rules that said, no, you're not allowed to rip your shirt off and go parading around like a tit after you've scored a goal. No, you're not allowed to kick the ball away after you've done something. No, you're not allowed. So not all the changes are bad.
I would concede that, bro. I would concede, you know, players, you know, ripping the shirts off and...
Yeah, tackle from behind, for example, outlawed. That's probably a good thing.
Very good thing. Yeah, and there are, you know, but, well, you've heard me do this 1,000 times, so I'm not going to do it again. I don't see what's lost from the game if you clean up the cheating. I don't see what's so attractive about cheating. It gets on my tit, no matter who does it, they do it, why they're doing it. Just get hold of it. You've got all this technology, use it and stamp it out. They've done it before, you know. They've stamped out players kicking the ball away. It's a waste of time. Good. Well done. Keep going, keep going, keep going. But you're right. When you go to, no, all right, you can take that corner there if you really want to. I mean, it's just bananas and frustrating because you can't see the reason for it. And, no. And you feel you're just watching somebody snatch what Man United's executive director, any advantage of any kind. And that's kind of become the culture of some of what we're watching. Some of it.
Yeah. But the problem is that the big issues are being ignored.
Yes.
And
yes,
you can look at it in its totality, hasn't it? And we've talked a little bit about this recently. You know, the timing of football matches, the fact that now only a quarter of games are played at 3 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
I think I'm right in saying, Paul, we've only got three, at the minute in time, I think we've only got three more Saturday three PMs scheduled at Hill Dickinson.
Okay, well, we've got eight games left, haven't we? Because we played 11.
Yeah, but I think I'm right in saying there's only three currently slated for 3 PM on Saturday.
Yeah.
And the chances are, odds on, that at least one, probably two, and possibly all three will get moved to accommodate TV. There is a possibility there might not be another 3 PM kickoff on a Saturday afternoon in the Premier League at Hill Dickinson this season. How can that be right? How can that be right?
Well, it's not right from the match going fans' perspective.
No,
but it is totally right as far as the five people that we just mentioned who run the Premier League.
Because the benefit of the five rather
they will argue for the benefit of football because that the ability to spread the program over Friday night, Saturday, several times during Saturday, several times on a Sunday, now on a Monday as well, is what generates the amount of revenue that they generate. That's what they're going to say.
Yeah, and they're right in their terms.
Yeah, but
because the fans don't matter. They are stupid sheep who will tip up no matter what time we tell them to come. They'll be there, the morons, going, "Oh, come but on, then, you." They wouldn't invite them, you know, all that claptrap about you must have a fan on the board. It's just mealy-mouthed crap from an establishment that doesn't give a shite about the people that they're providing this for, seemingly.
But the history of commerce and the history of consumer behaviour is that if a company, and all the football clubs are companies and the Premier League is a company, continues to create a product which becomes more difficult either to use, if it's a product that you use, or more difficult to watch in the case of football, is more expensive, is more difficult to get to because you've located the stadium in a place where there's not the infrastructure that's required, is a less than reliable product because of refereeing decisions, for example, last night. What does the history of consumer behavior, the history of commercial activities tell you, especially when this product is getting more and more expensive every single year? Eventually, the product ceases to exist because people just stop buying it.
Mm-hmm.
You have no evidence to support that point of view, have you?
In respect to football?
I could name 1,000 companies off the top of my head who've gone out of business because they failed either to keep up with the competition.
But do you think the Premier League is going to be one of those?
Well, I don't think anybody can possibly justify the argument that the Premier League is such a unique product and that the behaviour of fans is so unique that they can just get away with things with impunity.
It's breaking my heart to say this, Paul, but every match I watch proves that you're wrong. I wish you weren't.
I may be wrong in terms of my timing, but I don't think I'm wrong in terms of what ultimately will happen.
Well, I kind of hope that's true too, because something needs to change, because you're absolutely right. You know, this is what we're ranting on about all the time. The product, week in, week out, whether it's personal to us as Everton, and that's another issue, or just as a football fan, it gets less of it. The ball is in play for less time. There is more bollocks, more whispering, more shirt pulling, more sock tugging. But it's still massively successful.
So look at it in the context of Everton supporters.
Yep.
The match going experience has changed. And I know that change sometimes is difficult, but it's not as easy to get to the game too. For many people, for some people, it hasn't made much of a difference, but for many people, just based on what I read and what I hear and the messages I get from people from time to time, it's not as easy to get to as Goodison Park. We had to leave Goodison Park. That's not the argument, but the argument is that the infrastructure around the stadium is not what it should be. We've said that now for years before the stadium was built. We're still in our first year, obviously, at the stadium, and things might have improved a little bit as people develop patterns and understanding of how best to get to the ground. As you say, Andy, number of 3 o'clock Saturday kickoffs has reduced. The cost of going to the game is much, much greater than it was. And one of the reasons for that is that we have to compete with everybody else in terms of the amount of revenue that we generate in order to pay for players that we think are going to make our squad competitive. Well, but strictly with an Everton hat on and strictly with an Everton supporters hat on, there's a big question mark to ask the new owners. Are you producing a product that is competitive enough in this league for the amount of money that it costs Evertonians to go and watch the game and for the amount of time and effort they have to put in to go and watch the game? Now, they might argue that, give us a chance, we've only been here 12 months. But the fact is that we don't hear from any of them at any time. We don't hear from the CEO. A couple of times he's done videos and stuff, and he's appeared, I think, on one or two podcasts. But there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of listening. And I just know from my own commercial experience, and there'll be hundreds, thousands of people that listen to this podcast who will say exactly the same. When businesses stop listening to people and stop listening to people more than other businesses in the same sector, then you start finding yourself in difficulty. And I think we're part of the frustration that Evertonians, I can only speak for myself. Part of my frustration as an Evertonian at this moment in time is that we're struggling to compete. Part of that is down to a lack of investment in the squad, and part of it is down to a feeling that actually what the fans need, what the fans would like, what improvements the fans might like to suggest. None of that is being in any way listened to or contemplated by the people who run our club, in the same way that the people who run the Premier League have got no consideration for fans. We have that as well, in a very club-specific case, at Everton Football Club. And that is adding to the frustration. And it might even just, sorry, just finish. It might even be adding to the frustration of the players on the pitch, because they may be looking around thinking, well, okay, we came here. Why is the squad as small as it is? Why are we struggling to compete? I don't know.
Good questions. What were you going to say, Andy, about?
Sorry.
No, because it's relevant, Paul. The number of empty seats there were last night.
Well, the one thing I noticed yesterday afternoon when I was sat idly trolling around the internet, I was shocked is probably too strong a word. I was dismayed. There's always, there's. Let me just say up front, there's always a reason why somebody may or may not be able to get to a game. Okay. We've all got lives outside of football. We've all got concerns outside of football, whether it's travel, logistics, work, health, whatever. There's always going to be a reason why somebody is unable to get to a game. And therefore, they offer their tickets. To a willing purchaser. What I was a bit dismayed at or shocked at, but yesterday was the number of offers of tickets being available. Just seemed to be a lot more for last night's game than I've seen in previous weeks and other games, and it just made me think, are some fans becoming disillusioned with the way the club certainly with the way the team is performing and maybe even with the way the club is being run in terms of what Paul's saying is we don't know what the attitude of the owners is. We don't know what the attitude of the executive is because we don't hear anything. And it just made me think, you know, maybe, you know, 30,000 people have transferred their season ticket allegiance from Goodison to Hill Dickinson. And that for whatever reason, be it personal or logistical or just disillusionment with the club, last night, you know, yesterday, there just seemed to be more tickets being offered by people who, for whatever reason, weren't going to the game last night. And it just stuck a note with me. And I want to take it further with the way that season tickets now can or cannot be offered to other people. Because in the past, when we had physical season tickets, we had the little credit card season ticket in most recent years. If I was unable to go to a game, but I had a mate who wanted to go, I could lend him my season ticket and he could go and watch the game. That can't happen now unless the person I want to lend my season ticket to is a member of Evertonia at whatever price that is. I think it's around £60-65. So someone who hasn't got a season ticket has to join this membership scheme whereby they can then use my season ticket if I don't go, if I'm unable to go. And that just seems like, again, it's crowd engineering to me because, and this is the point I'm coming to, if I invest in a season ticket, and it doesn't matter whether it's Everton Football Club or any other club for that matter, if I, as a football fan of my club, invest in a season ticket at whatever price I pay, be it £500, £600, £700 or more if you're an Arsenal fan and you're paying over £1,000, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how much I've paid for it or which club I'm supporting. Once I've handed over that money to the club, whose season ticket is it? Is it the club's or is it mine? I've handed over a serious chunk of money. That season ticket should be mine. Therefore, what I do with it in terms of usage, whether I use it myself or whether through a situation where I cannot go to the game, but I want my mate next door to go enjoy the game and enjoy the blah, blah, blah. Surely that is my prerogative to do what I want with my ticket.
Obviously not, Andy.
And, well, that's the point. It appears now that...
At Everton.
Well, particularly with Everton, but I suspect it's with more, if not all. I can't speak for all the clubs, so I cannot say that for definite. But I suspect that, and Paul will probably advise us on this because he's probably checking up on it now while I'm waffling, is that the Premier League have said we want all memberships to be digital rather than physical. So that if my digital season ticket on my phone, if I can't use it, the only way to transfer it to somebody else is if they're a member of a membership scheme. Ergo, let's take £65 or however much it is with any other club off fans who currently haven't got season tickets in order that they can then use one that somebody who has bought a season ticket can pass it on to them.
100%, Andy, yeah.
And I think that is abhorrent. And it is my, if I bought that season ticket, it's mine. And it should be my choice what I do with it in the event that I am unable to go to a game. It should not be the clubs or the Premier League to say, oh, no, you can't pass that on unless whoever you're passing it on to has paid £65 and or more to that respective club for them to go to a game.
Andy, that's what your club is doing. That's what our club is doing.
Yeah, and it, to me, it absolutely stinks.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, I'm sorry to be the bringer of doom, but it is the club's prerogative to say that you can't pass your ticket on to somebody else, because technically, when you sign the terms and conditions when you buy your ticket, the tickets aren't transferable, or at least not transferable by you. They're transferable by the club. And that actually has been the case for many, many years.
All right.
Even when we had physical tickets. Now, it was widely ignored, because how do you monitor who's got a physical ticket and who bought it and everything else? But that is the case, and has been the case for many, many years. The Premier League have shifted to all digital ticketing. So by the end of this season, every single Premier League game in every single Premier League stadium will be digital ticketing only.
And so the only way then that for a non-season ticket holding supporter can get hold of a ticket is by joining a membership scheme for which they get press a little else in return, other than the potential opportunity. Somebody cannot go to a game, will relinquish or will pass on the ticket.
That's up to the clubs themselves. The clubs can make a decision on that. They will argue, I've seen it argued privately, that for security reasons, that they need to know who every single person is, and for segregation reasons, they need to know where people live, and therefore a digital membership scheme is one of the ways of doing that. I don't necessarily subscribe to that, but that's the justification that they will give for it.
Well,
yeah,
I'm lost for words. I'm seriously lost for words at the way football is going.
I mean, one of the changes that you could make. Is that, but the Premier League are not going to vote for this themselves, is that attendances should reflect the number of people who have entered the ground, not the number of tickets that have been sold. And then that would create a situation where you would know exactly how many people are not attending any particular game at any particular time. But again, from a presentational point of view, the Premier League aren't going to do that. They don't seem to be that concerned that you can watch a game anywhere in the world and see empty seats. That hasn't entered into their consciousness. But reporting the fact that, say, 46,000 people were there instead of 52,000, I don't know what the figure was, obviously. Nobody wants to do that.
Any more than they want to tell you how long the ball was in play.
Mm. Yeah. So there you are.
Just to kind of round things off from where Andy started and where what you were talking about, and just from, you know, because Armstrong is a presence. That was clear from last night. And the best thing about last night, in terms of the freaking saying nothing, I suddenly thought to myself, my God, if this was Bill, if Bill was still the chairman of our club, two things would be massively different. One, he would be looking to cash in on that kid at some point, because that kid, perhaps not as talented as Rooney, but, you know, that's been the whole history of Everton Football Club for yonks and yonks and yonks. It's Kendall retired, I think. If you've got a big asset, get rid of it. I remember your daughter, Andy, driving down with that wretch who went to rugby union, who was the chairman, and quoting the paper saying Rodwell was worth this, that, and the other. And a guy went, oh, great, let's get rid of him. And you go, one hopes, this is the point I'm trying to make, sorry, with Armstrong, that the Friedkins are not of that mentality. But the paradox of all that is that when Bill was chairman, there was a focus. Somebody did talk to us. We might have thought some of it was a bit twaddly, but he did talk to us And when we scored a goal, you knew that he was a blue. And I'm not wishing him back because I do believe he was an asset stripper at heart. And if he saw Armstrong, he'd be going, "Oh, I must get on the phone to United immediately," or whatever. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? And that mentality has to stop. Branthwaite, Armstrong, O'Brien, they have to be the centre of the next Everton team
Yeah,
with
but
Barry added
the
to
I
that.
agree with that 100%, George. But the owners and the Everton board have to demonstrate
Yes,
their
please.
commitment to those players in as much as they have to demonstrate their commitment to us as fans.
I couldn't agree more, Paul. It's really frustrating.
Remember, totally different player and a totally different mindset, obviously. And, Armstrong has been at the club since he was 5 years old. But you remember Lukaku laughing when he was away on international duty at Belgium when he said, "If you think I'm staying at Everton, you've got another thing coming." That was partly a reflection of Lukaku and his people's desire to maximise his earnings elsewhere. But it was also a reflection on the lack of he couldn't see a way that Everton could compete in the future.
He was
And in
right.
order to make that situation less likely to happen in the future, because not every kid is going to be as loyal as Armstrong appears to be, that's one of the competitive issues that we've got to address as a club. And we need to see evidence of it.
Yes. I agree. And I'll throw in one more thing, which will probably annoy you, Paul.
Hand grenade coming.
If you've got, a thin squad, 20 players, 25 players, whatever it is, and they constantly see the manager pick McNeil, and they constantly watch McNeil's completely periphery, you can't say he made two good centres and we scored from one and as a contribution, really, not in a 90-minute football game. My point being, sorry, that if they see him getting picked and picked and picked and picked again, what does that do to the mental level they think they're playing at? I would assume they would think, oh, it doesn't really matter, does it? Not really, really. If you can just tip up and run around and lose the ball 43 times and take two free kicks in a corner, and you still get a game next week. I don't think that's a great level that this club is at the moment. And if people are tipping up and are going, I don't want to go and watch Everton Wolves, I think it's partly because Wolves are bottom of the league and partly because Everton are playing like they're playing. And I put that responsibility on Moyes. And I wonder, and I'm fond of the man, I wonder whether he looks disengaged. He got engaged when he got angry, but he looked disengaged. And I just wonder whether, I don't know, whether, I just don't know, because as you keep saying, the free kids don't talk. So you don't know what the people above Moyes are thinking. But he looks lonely to me. I don't.
I think he's. I don't really don't want to pillory the guy. I really don't want to pillory the guy. But I think, and Paul will probably argue against me on this, and that's fine. That's his opinion, or it might be his opinion. But I think Moyes is running out of ideas. He's got the excuses that we've got players injured, we've got players missing through AFCON, and we're now going to have two players suspended. Keane for three, Grealish for one. But cold hard facts is we've just been trolleyed by Brentford, and we couldn't beat Wolves. He's been out coached and out tacticked by two considerably younger managers, and I think that to me is the signpost that the Friedkins need to be reading, is that Moyes, for all his solid, loyal effort, is not the future. We have to find a younger, more progressive coach, Stoke manager. Because I think, Tarko did sum it up, is they didn't adjust and take note of what had gone on with Wolves making their half-time changes. We didn't react. And it's happening far too regularly now. Far too regularly. You know, spanked by Spurs, spanked by Newcastle, Eddie Howe, younger, Thomas Frank, younger, spanked by Brentford, Keith Edwards, younger, and Moyes has never beaten Rob Edwards. Might only be four games, five games, but when he was at Luton, we never beat him. I think the writing's on the wall that we need a younger, more progressive approach to the game of football, and in particular to the modern game of football, where the rules are being changed willy-nilly by idiots who've got nothing to do with the game. And on that note, sorry, David, you know, thanks for the service you've given us, but unfortunately, for me, you've reached your sell-by date or use-by date.
Best before date, you mean?
That's the one. That's the one.
You're tempted.
I'm sure you're going to give me a contrary argument.
I am, but I'm not going to do it today because I think I could talk for an hour on why I still think he's the right person to be at the club at this particular moment in time.
Right.
Let's have that chat after the cup on Saturday.
Yeah, let's do that because I think it's a genuinely interesting conversation. So okay. I'm going to resist the temptation to respond immediately to you because otherwise this will be like our first ever 2.5 hour podcast. And
I'll be on VAR.
Nobody deserves that, particularly after last night. So
right, okay.
Let's call it a day there. Fascinating discussion. If nothing else, we still retain our passion, and Evertonians still retain their passion, which is, I suppose, what makes it so frustrating. If we didn't care, then we wouldn't have to do this.
Yeah. Yeah, fans care. Hierarchies don't appear to.
Yeah, well, people got to remember that fans care. But as I said earlier, there comes a limit. And there's no business in the world where that limit hasn't been reached.
No, that's true.
I can't see football being any different to that. Anyway, I've said that before. Gents, thank you so much. Really interesting conversation. Look forward to the weekend and our march towards Wembley in May.
Yeah.
And 8,000 Mackems coming down. Oh, dear.
Good fans, that lot.
Yeah. Wonder if they're going to bring any hog roast with them. The hog roast at the stadium alike is top-notch. But one day, we will do a TTV podcast on the food of football grounds.
I bet Delia Smith won that one.
Talking the chews. Look forward to it.
Exactly.
Sorry for the terrible joke. Right, let's leave it there. Thank you both.
He's not, folks. He does them all the time.
Yeah, you don't have to put up with some of the daft gags we get.
You have no room to talk.
Well, someone's got to bite back.
It's an outrageous slur.
Shocking, isn't it?
Against my character.
We'll await the solicitor's letters.
If we can find one, it will justify my position.
That might be a struggle, Paul.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Gents, thank you so much. I shall go away and practice my jokes for next week.
Good-o.
Good-o, yeah.
Good-o. I shall send you some puns, George. Don't worry.
Oof.
There must be some witty answers there, but I'm not quick enough.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Hope you got this far. Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.